This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Have you ever waited tables? Did you learn anything that's stuck with you years, even decades later? Anything about the nature of service? About why human beings behave the way they do? Someone once said a great waitress is like a great psychologist. She knows how to read people better than they read themselves. We have three guests who can tell us if there's any truth to that, since they've all spent significant time working as wait staff at a wide range of venues. The flip side of this hour's topic, if any of our guests ever served as your waiter or waitress, what would they say about you? When you dine out, what's your attitude toward your server? And might that tell us something about who you really are? A noted psychologist has agreed to join in later to help with that last question, but even before then, we're open to any thought you've ever had on the topic of waiting tables, right after we serve you some news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Ever been a waiter or waitress? What don't most people understand about that kind of work? If you have never held such a job, here's your question. Last time you ate out, how was your interaction with your server? And might that say something about you as well as about the person who was waiting on you that day? Waiting tables is our topic, and I hope you'll join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. Later in the hour, we'll hear from a psychologist who's done much research into attribution theory, something that may well enter into how customers and wait staff view each other. But we begin with three people with a variety of restaurant experience. From Afton, Michelle Simpson, thank you for making time for us.
Yeah, thank you.
From Waynesboro, Jennifer Moran, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
And from Charlottesville, a man we've all agreed to call Will Harrington, even though most people don't know him by that name. But since he's the only one of our guests currently employed in the restaurant trade, we figured we'd make it easier for him to keep his job no matter what he reveals today. Mr. Harrington, good to see you in the Insight Studios.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the anonymity as well.
Well, let's talk first about happiness and grief. Jennifer, as a former waitress, what brought you the most joy and what brought you the most frustration when you were doing that kind of work?
Well, let's start with frustration, as I think that that's probably the biggest misunderstanding in the restaurant business. A lot of the misunderstanding, I believe, that customers have are what goes on behind the scenes and being a waitress and how they get their tip. For example,
Part of what you're saying is frustration is that most of the people that you're waiting on don't have any idea what you're coping with to get them good service?
That's right.
Yes, often it's...
This is Michelle.
Yes. Hi. One big thing is that you have your customer in front of you, but that's not, and while you're trying to take the best possible care of them, there are, it's very possible you have many other customers and that you're also trying to take care of and staff that you're interacting with. And it helps if there is an awareness on behalf of the customer of what else you are currently experiencing at the time. And
Will Harrington, what is it most customers don't understand about what you and your fellow wait staff are experiencing?
I think a lot of people don't realize that the customer has almost as much of an impact on the interaction as the server does. There's kind of, in a way, it's almost somewhat required for a fluid, dynamic relationship for them to be somewhat reasonable, somewhat flexible. A relationship in a restaurant there and involves imperfect human beings, people that have not always know exactly what they want, even given that they have a fair idea. There are several moving parts that go on, and I think a lot of people just don't realize that while a server is there to provide them a service, at the same time, there are 4 to 10 other tables, potentially 6, 10, 15 other guests that are wanting the exact same thing as they do. I think that it by no means is it necessary for everyone to go through waiting tables, but if at any part someone could have a bit of empathy, I think that it makes the server's job a little bit easier. People are a little bit more reasonable, a little more flexible, and then everything flows a little better.
Our phone number here on Virginia Insight, 888-967-2825. If you have any thoughts about what it means to be working waiting tables, or if you've been on the receiving end of especially bad service and you have comments that you want to make about that as well. We've already got several comments on our Facebook page, but if you'd rather type instead of the talk, you're welcome to add your comments there. We're listed on Facebook as WMRA's Virginia Insight. We actually, one of my colleagues here at WMRA got this more than three-page email from someone that they apparently know, and the person sending this email had found out about today's topic, the waiting tables, and asked not to be identified. And so my colleague who sent me this did not even identify the person who was the author of this email. And it's obviously so long that I can't read much of it, but I just want to read a few paragraphs. So here's the first paragraph. Many years ago, in another lifetime, I had a very good job with state government in another state. I was what they called a political appointment, which meant I had been appointed by the governor's office. Unfortunately for me, when the administration changed, I found myself on the street, gainfully employed one day in a position where I wore suits and high heels every day and made a terrific living to on the streets the next day. And during the course of the email here, the author of this talks a little bit about going to work for, I think it was a Shoney's Big Boy restaurant. But I just want to skip to the end, to the last three paragraphs. I'll never forget my very first customers. I was doing great, took the orders with no problem, got their beverages, made their salads, took them to them. When my light went on, indicating my dinners were ready, I loaded them on a tray and carried them to the table and promptly dumped a plate of spaghetti on the lady's lap. She cursed at me. I cried and offered to pay her cleaning bill. My friend manager was very kind and gave me another chance since he knew I needed the money. I stayed in that job about 3 months and did improve, although I never really enjoyed it. And you know what? It's darn hard work for little money, and generally people treat you like dirt. Working that job showed me how hard wait staff work, that they are not responsible if the meal isn't cooked the way I want it, and they could be having a bad day too. They don't make a lot of money, and customers should understand they depend on their tips to make a decent wage, and they deserve respect and a little bit of patience. Michelle Simpson, Jennifer Moran, Will Harrington. Any response?
Well, I understand completely what she's talking about, and it goes along with that, you know, we're all human beings, and some people choose to do that type of work. That's because they want to make people happy. Some people are forced to because of, financial struggles, or that's all the kind of work that they can find at the time. And I used to always tell, you know, friends of mine that did not have experience waiting tables, if they would just, first of all, look at the server as either your son or your daughter. They're just as much of a human being. So
you used to tell your dad that,
yeah,
didn't you? You'd come home from waiting tables when you were in your late teens when you started, mm-hmm. and he'd never had any experience like that, didn't understand anything what it was about, and you said to him what, about the next time you go into a restaurant, pretends that's me?
Pretend that's me, and not just to him, but to anybody that hasn't been in the restaurant business, because I think they get looked at on, and it's easy to do, but they get looked upon as less equal, and that they're, it's okay to trample on them. And a lot of times, what frustrated me the most was, you know, if a server is rude, then that's deserved. You deserve to get a lower tip or no tip. Some people say at least 15%, but it depends on the rudeness. But if it's slow service, you might want to look at the big picture. I mean, there's a whole big kitchen back there that a lot of people don't see, the behind the scenes activity. It could be short staffed, or it could be food accidentally fell. I mean, all human errors.
And I'm going to jump in on that. The server is not necessarily going to convey this information to the customer, because they're working with their coworkers. You're working as a team, and you don't want to place blame.
Right.
And So you kind of...
But you're going to get blamed if the service is slow right. or but the meat is undercooked. Or,
but you kind of... Yeah, but you're the face of the restaurant and you take it. I mean, you take it for the team without making excuses.
I think people need to also consider where certain things come from that does not directly involve your server. For instance, if the restaurant is busy, if there's a long line, long wait, if there's not enough room to stand, et cetera, that has nothing to do with us. If the prices are too high.
With the us, you mean the servers?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I'm speaking as if I was still a server, what have you. If the prices are higher than they used to be, if they're too high for what you'd consider to be fair, if the selection is not the same, if you don't like the policies that the restaurant has, we don't really have anything to do with any of these things. So it's important, you know, if your drink isn't made as strong as you'd like, et cetera, it's important that people consider the fact that a lot of the things that, you know, we don't cook your food, we bring your food out to you, that at least give thought to the fact that a lot of things that people like to blame on their, like I might call the director of first impressions, the person that's serving your table, is not responsible for these things. And most of all, I think that people should remind themselves that being rude basically only accomplishes a couple of things. It's, you know, a lot of times it's fair to assume that rude people do not tip well. Perhaps they're perpetual pessimists, they don't have a good idea about things, and don't think that other people deserve it. That being the case, that mixed with the idea that no one likes to be around rude people, there's really no benefit to us giving them good service. You know, I hate to put it so bluntly, but if there's no benefit towards you, whether it's financially, whether it's putting a smile on their face, or just not wanting to be around them, a lot of times, inevitably, the customer at least causes servers to want or even subconsciously give them poorer service.
Our guests, Michelle Boggs-Simpson from Afton, Jennifer Moran from Waynesboro, and from Charlottesville, the man whom we are calling Will Harrington. All three of our guests have had years of experience working as wait staff at a wide variety of different types of restaurants. If you'd like to talk to them, we've got the phone line open for you at 888-WMRA. Talk. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. And Michelle Simpson, it's been my impression that there were things that you really loved about being a waitress. So we've been talking some about the frustrations, but tell us some about the joys.
I part of it may do just with my personality, but I think by nature, I'm kind of a pleaser. I like to make people happy.
Was a job where you got an opportunity to do that?
Sure. And especially in two of the places I worked at were in Stanton. So a smaller town, a community feel to both of those places. You had a lot of repeat customers who, when they walk through the door, they're happy to see you. You were happy to see them. You learn, you learn the things that please them. You learn their preferences, and knowing those things without even them having to ask. I think those types of experiences were the greatest to me. And then also being able to anticipate, to pay attention to your customer and being able to anticipate their needs, you know, before they even asked.
So there was some immediate positive feedback often possible.
Sure. I mean, even besides monetary, mm-hmm. The monetary feedback, you know, even besides tips.
Immediate.
Yes. Yeah, just the interaction and a point that Will made earlier that I think is crucial is that, and Jen touched on it as well, is that it is a human interaction. It is not even though someone is in a position to serve you and it is a business transaction of such, it is best if certain if entitlement is left at the door and you walk through open to your server as your server should be open and welcoming to you.
It sounds, Michelle, that as if when you were doing this kind of work, you found it at least some days a place where you walked away having experienced much affection from your customers.
Sure, a lot of that.
Okay, I want to ask you more about that. I want to get to these several questions that we have on Facebook. And if anybody is interested in sharing their opinions by voice, our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. We're going to continue talking about waiting tables in a bit more than 1 minute. Will Harrington is the name we're using for one of our guests who still works in the restaurant trade and who is increasing his chance of keeping his current job by not naming his current employer. Michelle Boggs Simpson worked as a waitress in a number of Augusta County locales during the 1990s. Today, she primarily waits on her three young children. Jenny Moran also has three kids, in her case, all the same age, since they are eight-year-old triplet boys. But before motherhood, Jennifer spent many years both in the restaurant and hotel trades. 888-967-2825 if you'd care to talk with any or all of our guests about our topic of waiting tables. Here on Facebook, we have from John. Please, please, please make sure to mention that waiters and waitresses are taxed for their tips based on what the check or tab is. Also make sure that you tell people what wages they earn per hour. I've waited tables before, and now I tip well, probably too much. Any response, Will?
Absolutely. I think there are several things that he touched on. First of all is maybe a lot of people don't realize, for the most part, I don't know about cities like New York, San Francisco, but for the most part, a lot of servers make less than $4 an hour. Now, what that translates into, if you have any reasonable amount of service, that the taxes that are taken out that you make from your tips are more than you would than a paycheck would be. So most servers, in fact, almost none, actually make a paycheck. In the long term, as you can imagine, on April 15th, we get hit really hard because you can't take a lot of the taxes out going forward throughout the meal. Throughout your job throughout the year. And I think that a lot of people also don't realize that servers, the people that are behind the scenes or perhaps that you don't see as much, servers tip out bartenders and bussers and hostesses and hosts and sommeliers, et cetera. And then every time someone runs a credit card, it's not large, but 25, 50 cents per transaction comes out of that as well. So as you know, when it comes time to tip someone, you should remind yourself that at least a reasonable percentage of what they're making, perhaps 10%, perhaps 15%, go elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people will tell me, why don't they add that on to the meal cost? Why doesn't the restaurant add that on to the meal, or not add it on to the meal? Why doesn't the restaurant cover that? Why don't they? Why do we have to pay extra? But they need to remember they're paying for the experience. You're not going to a McDonald's and picking up their own food. Part of the dining experience is the relationship you have with the server,
and paying for somebody to take care of you.
Right. And if you don't want that, then you have other choices. That's the way I look at it. If the restaurant did cover that cost, I assure you that it will come back to the customer anyway. And hence the service would be flat. It would not. The whole dining experience will not be the same. So you lose the whole experience.
It's been about 15 years since I've waited tables, and at that time I was paid $2.13 an hour, and it's the same today. So it and as Will mentioned, depending on the type of restaurant, you are tipping out bartenders and bussers and others and certain people. Some people tip out a set amount, but I don't know. I was also one of those people that tipped out more because it's all the way through the system, how you treat each person, whether it's your customer, the way your customer treats you, how you treat your coworkers.
No wonder you
got
your drinks first.
How they treat you. It's all about treating each other well. If everybody is treating each other well, then it's really can be a fun experience all the way around.
Laura, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Sure. I wanted to talk about the stereotyping that occurs from a server's perspective before they walk up into a table. I've been serving for about 3 or 4 years, and I see a lot of my coworkers will size up a table, which in a way we kind of have to do just to be able to provide that kind of accurate service. You can kind of judge what you think they're going to want, how you are going to approach them, the attitude you're going to use. But a lot of people I find will stereotype a table and then judge how much service or how much input they're going to put into waiting on that table because they may think that they are not good tippers. So I was just wondering what if you know.
You're allowed to jump in anytime, yes. Jennifer. I can tell by the expression on your face. You just want to go. It's okay. Just go.
I agree with you, and I feel like the server is usually the one that pays the price for that. I like to think I don't judge, but I know that we all have a profiling instinct that we're born with, but I try not to judge until after, you know, you tip me bad or not at all the first time, shame on you, you know. But if you do it again, I'm going to remember, and I'm not going to sacrifice my other tables to provide you with any exceptional service.
So, Laura, how do you handle the situation?
Yeah.
Typically, I will normally just treat everyone as much as I can, like, consciously, because, you know, there's always going to be that, like, in the back of your mind, it might impact you at some point, but as consciously as possible, try to treat everyone at the same level, unless, like, they're a regular and I know they like something different, you know. That way that I know that, you know, because every now and then you'll get surprised. Like, you'll find that these people mm-hmm. that you thought weren't going to be good tipples end up being decent tippers.
Laura, and thank you so much for sharing that perspective with us. We're going to go next to Harrisonburg. This is Eric. Eric, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight with Will Harrington, Michelle Simpson, and Jennifer Moran. Your question or comment, please.
Well, greetings. I'm listening to the show. I waited tables for 15 years. I have not waited tables for 5 years. It's interesting. The word affection was used a little while back, and I think that's correct. I think that when people are have been waited on by the same person for years, and there's a certain familiarity that's built up, and it really is, especially if you start out with a customer is a, you know, relatively young person, and they go through life changes with you as their server. I mean, I still get stopped, and people say, "Oh, you are my server," and it's just an interesting thing.
Michelle, yeah. We were talking with you about affection.
I was saying that I think that's one of the best parts about it is paying attention to your customers and listening to your customers, and these sorts of things come about, I think, in a really natural way. And to me, where the greatest payoffs and one great example is of that is I had a friend who's a friend now, but he came in, it's his first time, one of his first times in the restaurant that I worked in. He had moved down from Connecticut. He had broken up with this girlfriend, and for whatever reason, we started, we had a natural dialogue occurred, and he had mentioned that he had forgotten his paper. He tells the story all the time, how I went out in the rain and got him a paper without him even requesting it. And, yeah, I mean, he tipped me great. I took care of him. He took care of me. It's 20 years later. And we're still the best of friends. And there are, that's a bit of an extreme example, but there are so many people that I still, you know, now that I go in with my kids as a customer and I see former customers, and it's just, I'm still, the reception is still very warm. And, yeah, that's a great feeling.
Eric, thank you so very much for sharing that perspective with us. To the three of you here in the studio, Michelle Simpson, Jennifer Moran, Will Harrington, we now have somebody of whom you can ask questions if you want. Joining us by phone, a psychologist who's done much research into why people view and treat each other the way we do. And in fact, he is the creator of a whole new field of psychology, summed up in his recent book, A New Unified Theory of Psychology. Dr. Greg Henriquez, thank you for making time for us.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
Well, Greg, I guess the million-dollar question might be, does how we treat people who serve us say something about us?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say how we treat other people is a very, very important sort of indicator of our own basic psychological makeup. One of the things that a lot of people have been talking about is a concept I would call relational value. And we all need to kind of feel a sense of relational value, but we go about that in different ways. For instance, some of us try to be kind of loving and understanding. Other people try to be dominant and controlling to get their sense of relational value. When you're a server, I waited tables and bartended for a while, you kind of come in and I'm going to take care of you kind of role, and you give the customer a lot of power. The, you know, whatever the customer says is right. Some people take that power and kind of use it in a way that makes us feel, if we're the server, pretty underappreciated, disrespected, or undervalued.
Can I jump in?
Sure,
here?
This is Michelle.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, there's a saying that I think everyone is familiar with, the customer is always right.
Uh-huh.
And while I think as a server or someone in customer service, yes, the customer is priority and you want to get things right for them. But I also think that people that idea is forefront in their mind, the customers, and that walk in with a sense of entitlement, I really think it has no place.
And there's a line they can cross, too.
Absolutely.
It has no place. And
rudeness is one of them.
I think along those lines that, you know, I hope I don't sound crass, but not only is the customer not always right, they're always right about what they want, but they're rarely right about what they can have or the policies that go on in the restaurant that they're visiting. Just because perhaps other restaurants allow something doesn't mean that the one that they're currently in does.
Right.
The way that they may like things cooked, maybe we don't perhaps give that option. And as hard as it is for some people to realize, the employees that work in that restaurant have been along the lines of that restaurant long enough that there's a really, really good chance that they know more about the relative best practices of that restaurant than the customer does. I've found that, you know, going up to tables, et cetera, instead of making stereotypes beforehand, I often assess people in the, from the greeting. There are people that want their server not to speak. There are people that prefer that their server be nothing more than informative. Some people want a little conversation. Some people want a lot. And some people want a song and dance. And generally, it's at that point in the very beginning that the server has an idea about what to provide, any stereotypes they might make. And I think a lot of the assessment at the beginning of the meal is based on the demeanor of the customer. If that customer shows that they empathize, they have a bit of an idea about the multitasking, the goings-on in a restaurant, everything that's involved, then we tend to give them a lot more credit, a lot more, at least a little better service, because they can at least empathize and make our job a little easier. Whereas those,
but Will, I've seen you in restaurant work before. You like doing a song and dance.
And I do a song and dance, but I only do it for people that seemingly want it.
Or that they're nice to you.
If they're nice to me, I at least start with a little humming, perhaps a little, little foot tap, and then we go forward from there.
Dr. Henriquez, I heard Michelle Simpson say something, I think it was you, Michelle, about entitlement. Does that resonate for you at all, Greg?
Yeah, well, actually, that's when I made the comment, you know, that people have the mindset that the customer is always right, it then breeds this, that's what activates, you heard the commentary, then that activates this power dynamic. And it can create a sense of rudeness, and it can create a lack of empathy with what the server has to deal with. And so that can be a power frame. And then when that goes wrong, then you have, you know, rudeness on perhaps both parties, or, you know, that's an unfortunate. What I'm hearing is empathy for, you know, both the server, what the server needs to deal with, and to value what it is that server's doing. That's certainly what I wanted as a server, and I think I bring that to a restaurant now that I have some, you know, history with that experience.
So both clinical therapist and research psychologist Greg Henriquez, you teach about something called attribution theory.
Mm-hmm.
Does that theory say something about how and why waiters, waitresses, and customers might all view each other differently?
Sure. Attribution theory has a lot to do. It's basically, it's a fancy term for how we explain things in general, but in particular, interpersonal attributions are how we explain why people do certain things. So certainly if I'm sure any of those wait staff, myself, if I did a good job waiting and got a 10% tip or got no tip, I would make the attribution that the other person was a jerk or was really stingy. It's the way we go about explaining behavior. And of course, how we go about explaining behavior then frames a lot of what it is that we're going to do. Next time the person comes in, if it's because I attributed that because that they were a jerk, that I would treat them very differently than if I developed another attribution. Maybe they, maybe something dramatic happened right at the end of the meal and they had to get up and leave and somehow managed to forget, or they ran out of money because of some other incident. That would be more of a situational attribution. If I explained it that way as opposed to them being a jerk, then I would treat them very different. So attribution theory looks at about how people explain other people's behaviors and then the consequences those explanations have for future interaction.
I think one thing that's also really important is people should realize you don't have to work in the restaurant industry to be able to empathize. You don't ever have to have worked anywhere near it. If you just consider the idea of, for instance, if you were hosting a party at your house, how you would want your guests to come to you instead of telling you what you should have made or how it could have been better prepared or when you should have brought the hors d'oeuvres out. You know, consider no matter what job you have in this world, certainly there's some sort of interaction that you have with other people. And if you consider how that you would want to be with them, how you would want them to be with you, I think that's all the empathy that you really need in this relationship.
Mm-hmm. I was just waiting because you both look like you had, you know, this world-class psychologist on the line here that any question at all you
Big
wanted
words.
To ask him was...
No.
Greg, before you go, you want to leave us with any thought about what we should look for or what we should think about the next time we walk into a restaurant?
Well, I would just, you know, certainly listening to the beginning of the program, I heard a lot of themes about relational value, you know, about how we value others, how we try to create a climate of valuing, but respecting ourselves and respecting others. It's one of the foundational needs we humans have. And so I would say to your listeners out there, you know, when in doubt, give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Try to recognize that they're almost certainly trying to do the best that they can until you have clear evidence otherwise. And for servers, the same thing. I appreciated the comment about, you know, if we be aware of your implicit stereotypes that you have, counterbalance some of those, be conscious of the attributions you're making. And while we certainly do need to, you know, blame others appropriately at times, the more empathetic we can be in these kinds of situations, the more likely we're going to foster relational communities in which everyone has an enhanced sense of relational value and our well-being will be better off as a function of it.
Dr. Greg Henriquez, author of the new book, A New Unified Theory of Psychology, as well as a professor of graduate psychology at James Madison University. Greg, great to be speaking to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Before we hit the break, let's see if we can squeeze in a question or comment from Bill in Harrisonburg. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hello. I frequent a couple of the smaller restaurants in Harrisonburg, and I'm sometimes waited on by the owner of the restaurant. Now, I've always been told that you don't tip an owner, but I do, and I do so sort of trusting that that money will get back into the pool for the servers, and I'm curious as to whether that actually happens or not.
Does anybody know?
It certainly should. That would be the standard. It's reasonable that when anyone who is an owner or is management accepts a tip, if they are actually can accept the tip, that they are giving that to other people. That is not where they depend upon their finances. And most people that are a manager or an owner realize that the servers, every few dollars actually makes a pretty good impact.
Bill, great question. Thank you so much for adding it into the conversation here on Virginia Insight.
Thank you.
We're going to continue with our experienced wait staff, both current and former, and perhaps a comment from you. If you want to call in, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-967-2825. And we're going to hear from Elizabeth on Facebook in just a bit more than 1 minute. Jennifer Moran waited tables and worked in marketing in the hotel industry for close to 20 years before retiring from those trades to raise her sons, triplets, now each 8 years old. Jenny once also owned and operated her own deli and bagel shop in southwestern Virginia. Will Harrington has waited tables or been a restaurant manager in Nashville, Atlanta, Louisville, Auburn, and Charlottesville, just to name a few locales. Michelle Simpson worked as a waitress off and on through much of the 1990s. She worked for a time in another service industry as a bank teller. Today, she's a full-time mom to three young children. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham, and I promise this from one of our Facebook posters, Elizabeth, who says, "I couldn't do it. They work too hard. I tip well because I like it when somebody brings me food and then cleans up after me. In Australia, by the way, they pay servers a living wage. They do not rely on tips to survive. They also have national health insurance, so even if you don't make a lot of money, you have good health care. I like that. Anybody have a reaction to what Elizabeth
said? I'm moving. No.
I have a friend who currently is who's waiting tables, and she is paid $725 an hour.
Is this friend in Australia?
No. She's in Waynesboro. But they also pull the tips. It's in a tiny little place, and the way that it's set up, she likes. I mean, I think she's worked in situations where she's just paid the $213 as well and has gotten to keep her tips. But with the pulling of the tips, she finds that everyone works together as a team, and it's just another model for restaurants to be set up in. But it's another way to do
teamwork.
It.
Mm-hmm. Which pushes for teamwork as well.
I thought you said pushes for tea, so I'm glad we heard the second take.
I said that the first time.
And that may relate, tea or otherwise, to what Rebecca in Afton has to tell us. Rebecca, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, hi. I was waitstaff for 8 years at a venue, a winery venue, where we primarily did weddings, special events, fundraisers, that kind of stuff. I've got a couple of things to say there. Alcohol changes everything for wait staff and for customers. The more you drink, I suggest, even if you don't remember what you drank, to tip about 20%.
Agreed.
Because your wait staff has taken probably a lot of grief, even if it wasn't intended as to be mean or disrespectful. The other thing I have observed over time is when a customer treats a wait staff bad, they treat other people badly too. You're not special because you're the wait staff. I've been around where the customer treated me pretty bad. I saw them treat their friends exactly the same way.
Do you think that always holds up, Rebecca? Because my experience has been somewhat the opposite of that. I've had friends who were just really nice, sweet people, and yet I'd see them go into a restaurant and be kind of haughty and rude to the wait staff, so much so that one dear friend, I finally asked her about it, and she kind of froze and went, oh, my God, I've become my mother. You know, I think I just learned this because this is how my mother always treated servants.
Interesting.
So it seems to me that in any number of circumstances, whether it's in a restaurant, whether it's in a store with a clerk, even in a doctor's office dealing with a receptionist, I've seen people be exceptionally rude and nasty in a way that I don't see them do that in their everyday life. And I just wonder sometimes if there are some people that they get a chance, I don't know how to put this.
Show off in front of their friends, to
deal with somebody that they don't see as a real person because it's somebody serving them, that somehow
right,
they act
different.
Power
dynamic or something, yeah.
So I'm sorry I went off on that diatribe.
Interesting. No, and the other comment I had to make is I've worked with some wait staff that were phenomenal, where one particular event where a woman was not used to drinking, got really blotto, went in the restroom, vomited basically, and almost passed out. And her family basically just abandoned her. And the wait staff took care of her, cleaned her up, washed her up, got her respectable. She had a $1,000 dress on, made her look good again. And so, yay for wait staff.
Rebecca, thanks so much for sharing your perspective. We're going next to Harrisonburg. This is another Jennifer. Jennifer on the phone line. Thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
It's more of a observation of parallel between what they're doing with wait staff, or what I did as a wait staff and what I do now as a nurse. And that you do, you get a lot more entitlement issues as a waitress than you do as an RN, but you still get entitlement issues. And the people really expect, I should have this and I should have that. And the customer always being right. However, often the customer in hospital setting is very wrong. The reason that they're there in the first place is they weren't taking too good care of themselves oftentimes. That as well as patient satisfaction is now something that we're having to worry about for reimbursement from the government. If our patient satisfaction is low, we don't get all of the money that we would normally have gotten. And if it's high, you get extra money. When often the patients or the patient's family is in no real position to really understand whether they got good, competent care or whether or not the person that is taking care of their loved one just seemed nice. And you could have somebody completely negligent caring from grandma, and if that person seems like a nice person, you're going to give them great points, and that same person could end up killing your grandmother. But the competent nurse who does a great job, who might not come off so nicely, gets the bad marks.
Sometimes it makes me wonder if people that are in that provide any sort of service, perhaps they're not receiving the treatment that they think that they should. And in a lot of the industries where we depend on other people, you don't have the option of being demeaning or perhaps less than appreciative towards the people providing that service. If you're rude to the mechanic, there's no telling what they'll do to your car. You can't be rude, you know, to certain professionals, you know, perhaps directly to your doctor. I would hope people aren't that, you know, as rude to nurses, et cetera, because like you said, these people's lives are in their hands, whereas a server, either way, you're going to get something that you want.
Right.
Either way, you know that you're going to be, well, as happy as might be reasonable or as happy as you might allow yourself to be. So I do have to wonder if people just take advantage of that.
Well, sometimes you would be surprised, though, because part of our job is to bring you your meals or snacks. And, you know, if your physician has you on a 1,200-calorie diabetic diet and you ask for a snack, the answer is no. You don't have enough calories and you don't have enough carb exchange for me to get you something. But you're going to throw a fit, and if I don't get it for you, you're going to be upset. And if you mark wrong marks on the board or on the mailback, then the hospital as a whole, your local hospital that you depend on isn't going to get its funding because you didn't like that you couldn't have your ice cream as a diabetic.
Jennifer, thanks so much for sharing your perspective. We're going to go back to Facebook now, and this is Mike, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for reading this, but this is Mike's words, not mine. And Mike starts with this question: which is more frustrating, separate checks for parties of 10 who can't just bring cash and pitch in, or demanding and patronizing women who order one salad and split it and leave you a 10% tip after running you like a golden retriever, or people that come into the restaurant and expect you to be their dietitian as it relates to their perceived gluten intolerance? Michelle, I heard you chuckle in the middle of one of those, so
no,
I want to...
<not.
laughs> You're not going to respond. Jennifer.
Well, they're all three frustrating.
And all three very real?
Very real. I hate to comment on the woman. I don't want to upset anybody, but I understand where he's coming from.
Well, there is take that we've all heard, I'm sure, that men, especially men on dates, because they're trying to impress their date, tip the best, and women in groups tip the worst. Is there any truth to that myth?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
you know, you just don't want to say.
Yeah. Well, here, not as a whole. I mean, generally, yeah, I've noticed that, but I would hate to say that. And, you know, I know I wouldn't be like that. I'm a good tipper. You know, and I've gone in with groups of women that are good tippers. So, not everybody, but yes, a big part. And usually it's lunch. And usually it's just like he said, the big salad and split and very pleasant. And I'm going to get a lot of grief for this probably. I probably lose a lot of friends.
Well, discussion part that was earlier was about not making stereotypes. But in some instances, like we've just discussed, it's absolutely impossible not to make stereotypes. When you have a long list of history of a certain type of people that do or don't tip well, it's absolutely impossible, at least subconsciously, to ignore this as far as those three things and which would be the biggest pain or the most difficult. I think that all three of them, the key there are people that are taking quite a bit more time than, I'm not suggesting than they should, but then would be reasonable for the interaction that they may have. If you were to perhaps economize your requests so that each time the server comes, they bring everything you need, whether it's a beverage or a fork or a side item, blah, blah, blah. That makes a huge difference. If you want a bunch of separate checks, let them know at the beginning. But most of all, for instance, in the case of wanting separate checks, it's more important that you allow a few minutes at the end of your meal for the server, whether you're sitting with four people or 44 people, to split that up, especially if you've told them at the very end of the meal, so that they can, so that, again, we're back on the subject of having a little bit of empathy for what they do. If you need
Will
have
Harrington,
extra requests.
Is it possible that all of these things that we've been talking about as problems, including the three that Mike just named, are all related to this idea of the people who are causing those problems as customers not really seeing the person who's waiting on them, the person who's serving them, as a real person? Is there something sometimes about putting on?
I don't
on
know
a,
that it's I, that or just I don't oblivion, know. Just being in your own head and thinking about your own needs. And
I think it's a person. It's just not someone that you are worried about, you know, familiarity or having a friendship with. And I think to call
I wonder
those
sometimes if we see somebody in a uniform, particularly in a restaurant, working as a server. And somehow, I mean, there have been all kinds of psychological studies that say if we see that same person, even though we go into that restaurant time and time and again, we see that same person somewhere else wearing other clothes than their uniform, we don't recognize them.
Right.
So I wonder if there's some sort of flip side here of seeing that person in a uniform as a server that we somehow don't identify with them the same as we would somebody we meet on the street.
Well, there's also the thought that, you know, kind of like we discussed with stereotyping from the eyes of a server, there's also stereotyping in the eyes of the customer. You know, every single one of us have had a bad server. In fact, every one of us have had probably several bad servers, several bad bartenders, et cetera. But we have to remind ourselves that there's no reason to blame all of them. At the same time, every single one of us has had a bad mechanic, a bad accountant. We've voted for a bad politician. It's just unfair to mark that all servers are going to be a bad server just because you had a few bad experiences.
A lot of misunderstanding too is, you know, people have the servers go out on the streets and, you know, they're talking to their friends. Oh, you know, I made $100 or $200 last night tips. What? $100 or $200? You know, that's a lot of money, but they're, you know, forgetting that they're not getting much of a paycheck, if anything at all.
And that's Friday and Saturday nights as balanced with the lunch shifts you work.
Right. And yes, that's another thing. Lunch shifts. And I think that's a lot of the women thing. I'm still trying to figure out why it's like that, but it's true. And not to change the subject, but back to the women with the salad question, you know, it is a little frustrating as a server, and not just women, but a group of people come in. And, you know, they get 10 waters and one appetizer, and then they're tying up your table and your section. And this sounds so terrible, but, I mean, I know it's not their responsibility. I mean, they want to come in and have the appetizer, but they're tying up, you know, your big table and your section for 2-3 hours where you're losing potential income. It is frustrating, so that'd
Between
be nice.
Between the three of you, you've got, I haven't counted up, something like 40 or 50 years experience, all told, waiting tables and dealing with customers. So in case there's anybody listening who's wondering if it's possible to use certain strategies as a server that will work for them better, I want to ask you this last question. I saw this in a psychology textbook many years ago, and it theorized that the most successful waitress starts out at her table rather cool and aloof towards the customers, and then becomes more warm and friendly as she interacts with those people throughout the evening, because they end up thinking that she really likes them and it was something about them that made her become more warm and friendly, so they tip bigger. Is there any?
I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree, because that's a whole lot of thinking and strategizing. I mean, I keep saying the word natural. I mean, I think when you're in a restaurant as a server, you're welcoming people into your home in a sense. You're there to take care of them. And I think that's I would, you know, greet with a huge smile and I think it's important to put everyone at ease right off the bat and make the customer feel like you want them there.
Did you ever, Michelle, have a difficult customer?
Oh, of course.
And what did you do with them?
I don't know. It's been so. Honestly, I don't remember much of, except for being like crazy busy and being concerned about managing everything at once. Those are the bad experiences I remember. I don't remember many of the bad customers.
Jennifer,
so
we
many
put
good
you
ones.
On the spot at the beginning. We got 10 seconds left to see if you have any more thoughts about joys or frustrations that you recall from all the years that you did this kind of work.
Another joy, and aside from all that Michelle had mentioned, you know, the social connection, but you know, networking was big for me. I mean, it was very rewarding.
You actually got some future jobs from people that you
jobs,
met while
people,
waiting tables.
And, you know, both.
That's
sides.
Another show, though.
I've been a customer and networked with waitstaff and gotten jobs and vice versa. So you know, it can help both people.
Our guests have been one-time waitress and bank teller Michelle Boggs Simpson, former waitress and hotel marketing specialist Jenny Moran, current restaurant worker Will Harrington, plus earlier in the program, the author of the new book, A New Unified Theory of Psychology, Dr. Greg Henriquez. Thank you all for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you'll find more information about all our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.